In our course, in our series on Luke, the eternal series on Luke. So I will get this finished before the Lord comes. I do promise you that. So if you have whatever that you read, your Bible will work, iPad, iPhone, Droid, whatever that you do, computer, turn to or type in Luke chapter 7. We'll be looking today at verses 11 through 17. Now, ask you a question to begin with today. Do you recall the very first funeral that you ever attended? Think about that just a second. First funeral I ever attended was my grandfather's. He was Grandpa Young, my dad's dad. I loved him. He spent a lot of time with me. He wasn't a disciplinarian. He never raised his voice. He never spanked me. He just loved me. He was different from me with my grandkids. But anyway, he did. And I remember going to his home, waiting for him anxiously to get home from work. He would come in. He would, I'd want him to play with me. I would run and jump on him and come play with me. And he'd say, let me rest a minute. And he would get his newspaper, as he always did every day, go out on his front porch in Miami, Florida, sit in his swing, drink a glass of tea and read his newspaper. He did that every single day. And once he summoned up the energy to spend on me, and if you become a grandparent, you know what that means. You have to find energy that you don't have. You have to summon it up. And then he would expend it on me. We would go out in his backyard. He had a shuffleboard, and we would play shuffleboard. And he taught me how to do that. He taught me how to do dominoes and checkers. And on Wednesday nights, back then, they had Wednesday night fights and black and white television. I know that sounds funny to some of you, but they really did make black and white television. That's all there were. And we would go and we would watch black and white television, watch boxing, Wednesday night fights. And he would let me pick my fighter, and then he would pick his. He would select his fighter, and then we would cheer on our boxers, you know. He spent a lot of time with me. I loved him, and because I knew he loved me. So you can imagine how it was the morning that my dad walked to my bedroom door, knocked on it, and said, Delbert Ray, my daddy died last night, your grandfather, your Grandpa Young. You know, how do you, you're a boy, how do you respond to that? What do you say? What does that mean? Does it mean we're not going to get play shuffleboard? What does that mean, Grandpa Young? Well, we lived in Griffin, Georgia, and Grandpa Young lived in Miami, Florida. So we had to drive down there to see him, go to the funeral. And I'll never forget walking into the funeral home, and there laid my Grandpa Young, dead in his casket. And, you know, you want to shake it and say, let's go play shuffleboard. Let's watch some fighting. Let's spend time with me. See, there's nothing more devastating. And this was 50 plus years ago. And I still relive it. When there's nothing more devastating than death. And as bad as death is, there is no place more needful for compassion. And so what we're going to be looking at today is Jesus expressing compassion at a funeral. Death is devastating. I try to recall all the funerals that I've done in my tour of ministry. And I really can't recall them all. It's been over 50. And these aren't, you know, and I don't go to the funeral homes and say, hey, put me on a list, and if somebody needs a pastor or preacher to come preach their funerals, then I don't do that. It's just been us. It's been your relatives and my relatives and our loved ones' relatives. 50, over 50. And it's been amazing. See, the world is so full of hurt and pain. The world is so damaged, but nothing brings as much hurt and pain as does the death of a loved one. And nothing ministers to that hurt and pain as does compassion. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to go with Jesus in this crowd that's following him, and we're going to watch him minister at a funeral. So I want you to, if you will, go to that place, maybe the last funeral that you went to, or a place where you remember and you recall how it felt to be at a funeral, and the emotions and the and the hurt and the pain that you were experiencing or someone was experiencing, and relive that with me just for a little while. And let's go with Jesus as he ministers at this funeral. And it's a widow woman. It's a woman who's burying her last child, her only son. And she's going to bury him. It's the worst day of her life. She's emotionally wrecked. And I learned early on in ministry the devastation that death brings to people. That when someone dies that you love, the devastation that it happens in a person's life. And I learned how inadequate I am. Every time I have to deal with death, I feel so inadequate. And I watched my own mother take her last breath, and I couldn't do anything about it. Judy and I was with her grandfather in a hospital room, and we watched him take his last breath, and I couldn't do anything about it. I was with you guys not long ago. We watched someone take Sybil's husband, Greg, take his last breath, and you know, I couldn't do anything about it. And I remember at that moment that I was hurting for you guys so much. You know, the compassion that I had in my stomach and my belly, I just couldn't control myself. And here I am, you know, and I want to minister. And I want to pray. And I remember saying, can we pray? And I was trying to get myself together. And finally, Sybil looks at me and she says, well, go ahead, Pastor Delman. And I said, I'm trying. But there is a compassion that people need when they're going through these times. And so what I want us to do today is go to this funeral with Jesus and watch him and learn from him to minister at one. So let's read in Luke chapter 7 and verse 11 up through verse 13. It said, soon afterward, the afterward is just after he had been amazed by the centurion's faith. Soon afterward that we studied last week, Jesus went to a town called Nain. Now, that should be pronounced Nain. It's in two syllables, but everybody says Nain, so that's what we're going to say too. Nain. And his disciples and a large crowd went along with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. Now, this is the magnitude of this story. The magnitude of this story is this widow woman who is burying her son, her only son. And a large crowd from the town was with her. So we have two large crowds. We have the crowd that is coming with Jesus, and we have the crowd in the funeral procession. They're coming out of town, and Jesus is coming to town. And when the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her. The King James Version says he had compassion on her. I'm going to say something that may sound a little silly, but I want you to see who he had compassion on or to whom his heart went out to. It wasn't the dead guy, okay? It was to the woman. It was to the widow woman burying her son. Now, that sounds maybe silly to you because I said this to Judy, and she said, well, of course, you know, the dead guy's gone. He can't do anything for him. But see, I want you to get the heart of the story here because the heart of the story is not Jesus raising this dead man to life. The heart of the story here is his compassion for this woman. This is the heart, the meaning of the story that we're looking at as Jesus ministers here to these people. His heart went out to her. And what I want you to see is this, is when you're hurting, when you've lost a loved one, Jesus hurts for you. His heart goes out to you. And there's a compassion that he has at that time for you, unlike any other time. Something happens then when Jesus comes at this particular moment in our lives. The soon afterward, as I said, was the time after the centurion amazed Jesus with his faith as he raised the centurion's servant up from sickness. That was it. But the main thing here is that this was a very popular time for Jesus. People were going with him all over the place. Large crowds were coming to see him, not only coming to see him, but wherever he went, they went. Crowds were following him. And wherever Jesus went, miracles happened. And where Jesus went, lives changed. And it's the same way today. When Jesus comes, when Jesus shows up, something miraculous happens. Jesus comes to us, and he's still doing it today. So anytime he shows up, something good's going to take place. Jesus went to this little tiny village called Nain. Nain. It means beauty. This is what the word means, beauty. It's a little tiny place. It's a little village, actually. And so I want us to kind of get an idea of where, what we could relate to. So I want you to think of like Subligna. I want you to think of maybe Kensington. See, I don't want you thinking like Rock Spring or Villanelle, because you'll go through Rock Spring going to Chattanooga, or you'll go through Villanelle maybe going to I-75. But when you go to Subligna, you're going to Subligna. And this is what I want you to see. And it's tiny. It's a tiny little town, a tiny little village. It's small. It's amazingly unimportant. It's nowhere. It's out of the way. It was then. It is now. It's about 20, 25 miles southwest of where Jesus was in Capernaum. And it's like 6 or 7 miles due south from Nazareth. It's more out of the way than Nazareth. And Jesus has got to walk there. So if Nain is so obscure and unimportant and out of the way, why did Jesus go there? There probably wasn't even a synagogue there. Why did Jesus go? Why did the most popular ministry ever, not just then, but ever, the person who was attracting these large crowds to where he was, they were coming to him. Why was this ministry that was in such demand, why would he walk 20, 25 miles over rough terrain, dragging a crowd with him, to go to this little tiny, obscure, insignificant village? Here's the answer. The answer is a divine appointment. He went there because Jesus goes to find wrecked people. When you're emotionally wrecked, he's on his way to you. When things happen in our lives like that, Jesus is already out looking for you. The woman didn't ask him to come. He just went. We don't ask him to come. He's just there. And no matter how obscure or lonely or isolated you feel or I feel, when we go through these tough times, these emotionally wrecked times, when we experience these times, Jesus is on the way. He knows exactly where I am. He knows exactly where you are. And he's going to come and have a divine appointment with us. Jesus finds broken people no matter where they are or who they are. Now, some of us right here, right now, may be broken. You may be going through something right now that's emotionally wrecking. Some of us have recently gone through something that's been emotionally wrecking. One thing I can guarantee you is that you will be going through something that will be emotionally wrecking. And what I want you to hear me say is Jesus is already on the way. It was interesting as I saw this, because he's got to walk 25 miles or 20 miles. It's going to take at least a day to get there. And plus, he's dragging this crowd with him. So it's going to take a while to get there. And when they did funerals back then, they didn't embalm you. I mean, now Joseph was embalmed, and so was Jacob. But other than that, I don't know of any Israelite that was embalmed. And so the funeral was done as quickly as possible before decay set in and the odors began to come. They would, within hours, have the funeral. Well, if it took Jesus that long to get there, if it's going to take him a day or even maybe more to even get there, to show up at the exact moment that they're coming out of this gate in this funeral procession, then Jesus had to be on the way probably before the man died. And before we even go through the thing, probably before we even know sometimes we're going to be going through the thing that we're going to be going through, Jesus is already on the way. He's coming. He has compassion for us. No matter what you're going through, Jesus is on the way. And though Nain and this tiny little obscure town may have been unimportant, this widow wasn't. Neither are you. Let's read verse 12 again. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son, and this is the part I want to talk about for a few minutes, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. This is the center of the story. And a large crowd from the town was with her. Now, likely this widow was poor, likely this widow was uneducated, probably illiterate, and she has previously buried her husband. She's a widow, and now she's burying her son, her only child. And it's difficult enough in America to be a widow, a widower. It's difficult, even in our country. But imagine then. Imagine there. There were no social services. There was no social security. Her only source of income was dead. She had no life support. She's suddenly all alone. There's no children, no welfare. It's the bleakest of bleak moments for her. It's the worst day of her life. It couldn't get any worse. And making it even more worse is that when the last child dies, the family dies. When God in the Scriptures wanted to express the worst of worst situations, the saddest of sad, when He wanted to express that, He expressed it as the last child dying. And I want to read you just one of these passages in Jeremiah chapter 6 and verse 26. It says this, O my people, put on sackcloth and look at this, roll in ashes. Not just sprinkle ashes on your head or wipe them on your face, roll in ashes. This is the worst of the worst. Mourn with bitter wailing as for an only son or an only child. When the last son or the last child died, family died. It was it. The saddest of sad times. And this widow is going to be forced to beg unless somebody just takes mercy on her. Her life support is gone. One day, though, life was named. Life was beautiful. One day, she had a husband. One day, she had a son. One day, she was living the dream. Every woman's dream. Living in beautiful name. Then one day, her husband dies. Today, she's burying her only son. How quickly, hear me, life can turn on you. One day, everything's sunny. Next day, it's bad. Here's what I want you to hear, though, is Jesus knows about it. You have a divine appointment, and He's on the way. Now, the way funerals were done there, as I've already related to, are different than we do them. There's some similarities, and I'll help us see that. But they were coming out of the town with this funeral procession. She would be walking in front of the funeral procession with her family or those around her that would be trying to minister to her. The minister would be there, and they would be in front. It would be like the family car in a funeral procession. Right? Then they would be grieving and wailing, and then behind her would be what we would think of the hearse. It was pallbearers carrying the deceased on a casket is what it's called, but it was really a wicker stretcher. He would be laying on it with a shroud over him. They would be wailing. Behind them, and here's where it really changes from what we do in our traditional funerals, behind them, the deceased, would be these professional wailers. These would be men and women who were paid, hired, employed to wail and cry and mourn loudly. They would be throwing dirt in the air. They would have ashes all over their hair and all over their face. They would look pale. It would be, a really horrible thing to look at. They also would be beating on cymbals. They would be making all kinds of noises. They would be playing instruments that would be playing dirges, really sad notes and choruses. I mean, it would be like we're going into a funeral home, you know, and they have the background organ music playing. That's a dirge. And this is what they would be doing, except it would be extremely loud, causing all kinds of commotion, tracking everybody that would be within hearing would know what was happening. And then behind them would come the procession of people. And maybe you could relate to it maybe this way a little bit. You're in a city, and through the city comes the funeral procession. We have our lights on. But what they would be doing would be blowing the horns. They would have the windows down. They would be hanging out the windows and wailing and crying and beating on cymbals. And it would be, everybody would see it. Everybody would see it's happening. And so when they saw this happening in the town, they would put down what they were doing, and they would go and support and fall in and join in to the procession and help her grieve. It would be the funeral procession that we're kind of seeing, except it would be much louder and much more chaotic. And I want to say something here. See, I know that some of you detest funerals. I mean, you won't hardly go to somebody that's in your own family. You just don't like them. I understand that. But listen, you need to suck it up. And you need to join in. And you need to help this person grieve. Now, you might not can get off of work and go to the funeral, but you can pick up the phone and you can call. You can say, hey, I'm so sorry. I just want you to know I'm thinking about you. I'm praying for you. You can send flowers. You can do something. Listen, we need to join in. We need to have some compassion for people when they're going through these tough, tough times. And they don't really want you to do a lot because they've got enough on them. You can call them on the phone, and they're probably not going to answer. But you can leave them a message. Just tell them, I love you. I'm thinking about you. That means so much to people. And while I'm on this particular point, I want to applaud our life groups. Listen, you guys do an amazing thing here. You pour it out to people. You go to these things and you serve these people that are grieving and hurting. You go to them. You cook for them. You prepare for them. You make sure they're served. I just want to tell you thank you. Thank you. Not just for me, but for them. They so appreciate it. They need somebody to do that for them so that they can go through the process of getting through it and grieving. That's how the funerals were done there. Jesus and his crowd showed up, and they run headlong into the crowd that she has with her coming out of town. So let's read verse 13. It says this, when the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her. Now I want to read it to you from the King James Version. And other translations say this as well. And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her. I want to talk about this word, compassion, in the Greek. It's the Greek word splagnidzomi. Splagnidzomi. And it's the definition that I'm after. It means to be moved as to one's bowels. What? Yeah. Hence, to be moved with compassion. It's a compassion movement. Now, we don't say how much we love someone by expressing to them what's happening in our bowels. Neither do we express to someone how we're hurting with them and the pity that we have on them by expressing what's happening in our bowels. But we get the understanding, or we should. You see, what it's really talking about is the deepest, unstoppable gut feeling possible. You cramp. We all have experienced this. Something's going to happen. Something's going to move. Something's coming out. And you can't stop it. When we really have compassion, you're going to do something. Something's moving. Something's going to happen. And Jesus consistently had compassion on people. He looked at the multitudes and he had compassion on them, the Bible says. They were sheep without a shepherd. When we look at people, do we have that kind of feeling for them when we know they're lost? When we know they're going to go to hell unless something happens in their life? Shouldn't we? Shouldn't we have something happening inside of us that says, I need to do something here. I need to move. He would see the 5,000 coming, the 5,000 men coming, and their wives and their children coming. He said he had compassion on them. Like little birds in a nest, you know, feed me, feed me, feed me. This is kind of how I picture it. And he did. He had compassion on them. He did a miracle. And what I'm wanting us to see is that when we really have compassion on somebody, something amazing is going to happen. There's going to be a miracle that's going to take place. Something amazing is coming out of us that's going to minister to those people. He did it again with the 4,000 coming. He looks out there, he does the same thing. He looks at the blind men, and he has compassion on them. And out of him. Because of this compassion comes a power, and this power heals those blind men. The power had come out of his... Before he healed him, he had compassion. He sees the leper. He looks at this leper. And we talked about that. We taught that. Leprosy is a wonderful picture of sin on our souls and what our souls look like to God when we have this leprosy of sin. And he didn't say, if you will, you can heal me. He said, if you will, you can cleanse me. You can make me clean. And Jesus had compassion on him. And when we see people so covered with sin, so nasty, instead of judging them, we should have compassion on them. And something should move. And not only did Jesus talk about, does the Bible talk about the compassion that Jesus had, he told us to have compassion. It tells the story about the servant. He wanted compassion from his master. He owed him a lot of money. The master had compassion on the servant and forgave him all of his debt. But somebody owed him money, the servant money, that he had been forgiven, but he didn't have compassion. He wouldn't forgive the debt. And he's the one who went to prison, the one who would not forgive. When we don't move in compassion, we're the ones that lose. We're the ones that get locked up. He tells us the story of the Good Samaritan. He says, there's this guy, he's going down the road, and these robbers jump out and beat him and leave him for dead, strip him naked, beat him, he's bleeding. And here comes this religious priest by, sees him, walks on the other side of the road. And that's what religious people do. Instead of having compassion, he leaves, and this Levi comes by, another religious person comes by, and he does the same thing. And then comes a Samaritan, the scum, as far as the Jews thought. He sees this guy laying over there. He goes over and he pours oil and wine in his wounds. He heals him. He puts some clothes on the guy, takes him to the inn, pays for him to get healed. What do we do when we see somebody beat up by the world? What do we do? Jesus was constantly telling us to have compassion. He talks about the prodigal son. The prodigal son, he comes home. From being gone lost, you know, went out and ate with the pigs. And it talks about a sinner coming back to God. The father didn't judge him. He ran out to greet him, hugged him. Didn't bring up all of the mess he'd been through and all the things he had done. He hugged him. He kissed him on the neck. He gave him some clothes. He gave him a ring and some sandals. And he says, I'm glad you're back. How do we respond to people? When is the last time you had a compassion movement? When you went out of the way to do something for someone. I have this little illustration because it spoke to me. When you're going down the interstate, and I thought this is something most of us could relate to, and you look ahead and you start seeing the red lights come on the cars ahead of you, and you start looking ahead and you see lines of traffic as far as you can see, traffic lined up, and suddenly you're sitting still in the interstate. You were running 70 plus, and now you're here sitting still. How do you feel? Do you fuss? Do you say, oh, man? Because, see, if you can see that far and that much traffic is backed up, that tells me something bad's happened up there. Somebody's having a bad time. And, you know, I'll tell you the truth about me is I used to fuss, and I still probably do initially. I'll say, oh, man. But then I catch myself. I guess here's why. Because now what I start doing is I start praying. Here's why is you would drive, you know, traffic would start moving, and so you'd begin moving, and finally you would get to where the crash happened, and you would see the mangled vehicles. And then maybe you'd see a body bag. Or maybe somebody being loaded in an ambulance, bleeding. How do you feel then? How do you feel about fussing then? And this is what happened to me. And I thought, wow, I should have prayed. What if I'd have prayed? Would that body?